right now. Let's go to our live line and join Dorsey Hager, the Columbus Central Ohio Building Trades. What do you think? Are you ready for the Super Bowl here, Dorsey?
I'm ready and hungry. I think you're making me more thirsty. We're in the middle of the day here Friday, staring weekend straight in the face, and you're making me more thirsty than anything. But, yeah, I'm ready for the weekend, and I'm definitely ready for the Super Bowl. Patriots-Falcons, I think it's going to be a great, great game. I can't wait.
Yeah, you know, Atlanta's been really hot lately. I think this one is going to go down to the wire. We'll see what happens. I know the Patriots are favored by 3 points.
I think so, too. I think it's going to be a really close game. You're right about Atlanta being, on fire right now and in a groove. Their offense is awesome, leading scoring team in the NFL. But then again, you give Belichick and his defense 2 weeks to prepare, makes it tough. So
yeah.
We'll see, but I hope it's competitive. I hope it's close. I hope it's a good game.
You know, I'm happy for Alex Mack, who escaped Cleveland.
Exactly. Very happy. And, you know, he's taken a lot of the credit for their turnaround because
they say
that not only is he a good athletic physical center, but he's a very cerebral, very smart, intelligent center, too. And he does a lot of the block calling and the scheming for Matt Ryan to take some of that load off his shoulders so he can make more decisions at the line of scrimmage when he audibilizes. So they said that he's been a tremendous leader in the locker room and in the huddle and on offense. And he, you know, you think about the highest scoring offense in the NFL, you think about a quarterback or a receiver or a running back, and they give a lot of credit to the center, Alex Mack. So.
Mm-hmm. He escaped from Cleveland onto bigger and better things.
Yes, he did.
Oh, well. Okay, let's talk about labor here. The big story in the land, and we've been addressing this on the show quite a lot, and that was the meeting that Trump had with union leaders, mainly the building trades, and this was about a week and a half ago, which caught a lot of attention. In fact, Trump made a couple of cheap shots saying that Obama didn't have a meeting like that, and I know Obama was not a fan of the Keystone Pipeline. Trump is. That got their attention, and of course we're talking about roads and bridges construction. What's your take? I mean, you're head the building trades down in the Central Ohio area. There's got to be a lot of discussion about this down there, right?
Yeah, and you know, there's a lot of discussion about it. There's a lot of different opinions, a lot of different theories, but I was looking at it from several different angles. First of all, and I know you and I talked about this a little bit off the air, Donald Trump is a lot smarter than people think he is. And you talked about the teachers, you talked about some sectors of the private sector unions that I think that he knows that it's going to be hard for him to garner support. I think he looked at the building trades, and I think his message, and I think he realized this a year and a half ago when he ran in the primary, I think he realized his message resonated with the building trades and the factory workers and the manufacturers and the Rust Belt, you know, about immigration reform, about renegotiating free trade deals. And his message with the building trades that he's never strayed from, it's been consistent, even though he's flip-flop on a lot of issues, is his support of pipeline work and infrastructure work. And, you know, whenever you have a chance to meet with the president, no matter what party affiliation or if you agree or disagree, I think you got to take that meeting. And I think it was good leadership by Sean McGarvey. I think it was smart.
Mm-hmm.
He took in the head of the sheet metal workers and the plumbers and pipe fitters with him as well, which I think was very important to have a couple of other sets of ears there at the meeting to listen. And, I mean, it really got a lot of play for the president because, I mean, I heard about the meeting was going to happen at 3. I was kind of watching news outlets at 3 to see if it was happening, and it was. And then later that evening when I got home, I mean, probably like you, I watch all the news shows because I want to see what different people have to say about different things. And you flipped over to Fox for a good 12, 14 hours every 10 to 15 minutes. They just continuously spooled Sean McGarvey's comments about how productive and how great the meeting was and how he was very happy to have that meeting with the president. And they talked about, like I said, they talked about pipelines, they talked about infrastructure work. And, you know, a couple things that came out of it, and like I said, this goes back to Donald Trump, you know, like him or hate him, I think the guy knows what he's doing. He's very smart. He's very politically savvy for somebody who's never been in politics. You know, he calls that meeting at 3 o'clock. He has that meeting. It's a very productive meeting. He owns the news cycle for the day.
Uh-huh.
The next morning, the first thing he does is he gets up, whether you agree or disagree, again, he gets up and he executive orders the Dakota Access Pipeline and the Keystone Pipeline. So our members all across the country, who I think in the Rust Belt, I think it was about 56% voted for him, are picking up their newspaper 2 days in a row, and they're reading positive things about the president for the building trades. Now, we got to hold his feet to the fire and keep those promises, because those pipelines are going to create a lot of work, and the infrastructure he's talking about is going to create a lot of work too. And there's rumors that the Republican-controlled House and Senate is going to try to gut prevailing wage and take prevailing wage off his infrastructure bill, which would be detrimental to us and the working people of this country, because it would drive down wages and benefits. But if he does a trillion-dollar infrastructure plan like he's talking about, and prevailing wage is still tied to it, that's going to create and keep a lot of our members working, which is going to be good for us and good for the economy. Another thing that he did, I think, to kind of own the news cycle on the third day, I don't know if you saw it, but there was an email that came out of communication, and he has listed his top 50 infrastructure priorities. Three of the top 50 were in the state of Ohio. The third one was a $2 billion technology center in conjunction with the Ohio State University to be built right here in Columbus. So if that comes to fruition, I mean, a $2 billion job in the eight counties that I represent in Central Ohio would be a huge undertaking, a huge undertaking.
Here's the problem, and this is really bothers me, Dorsey. You brought it up about prevailing wage, and you know, you had an audience with the labor leaders there, and they pressed him on that. He didn't give them any answers.
No.
Can you read into that? Does that mean, because I've heard that they want to like really, really scale back Davis-Bacon, maybe even get rid of the National Labor Relations Act?
I'm hearing that too, and that concerns me, because again, we go back to Trump, and I know I'm saying this again, but he's a smart guy and he's politically savvy. He understands that a lot of what he is doing is going against the grain of his own party, you know, tearing up TPP, renegotiating NAFTA and CAFTA. You know, Paul Ryan and those guys and the leaders in the Republican Party are pro-free trade guys, and they don't like that. So, you know, I'm very concerned that he didn't come out and take a 100% stance that he was going to keep prevailing wage. I'm very concerned about. And then, you know, the latest this week also is there's two Republican Congress people that have introduced a bill for national right to work.
Right.
And then, you know, we've talked about this in the past with the obstruction of Merrick Garland. You know, he's going to get to choose the seventh and deciding vote on the Supreme Court. And while they say Neil Gorsuch, his pick, is, you know, is a moderate, when it comes to business and when it comes to labor, he sided with business and went against labor in every case he's ruled on. So that's something we've got to keep in the back of our minds too, and got to focus on.
So if they go with right to work, most likely that'll be challenged in the courts, and it could go to the Supreme Court, and obviously, with a 5-4 balance, if it's five conservatives, we'll have a national right to work law.
I think it would be a slam dunk. And they say that, you know, the rumor was last year that when right to work was coming up, because of the school teacher in California that had worked its way up the court to Supreme Court, they were saying that it was a 4-4 debt and that he was going to vote, you know, to uphold the lower court's decision so there would be national right to work. A lot of his decisions, especially when it comes for business, and against labor, are right in line with the former Justice Alito. So that's not a good thing for our members.
Yeah, we had Sherrod Brown on the show yesterday, and he was saying that he's going to be part of the group that's going to really fight that, and we'll see what happens, especially if they go with that so-called nuclear option. Getting back to national right to work, I have a couple of questions here. Would states do this? We've seen Kentucky. You and I just talked about that.
Yeah.
I don't know if they're the 27th or 28th state now with right to work. How does a national law work? Does that supersede the state laws, or does that mean that it's just a uniform right to work law in the country then, or what?
I think it would supersede all state laws, just like the National Labor Relations Act does. You know, I think it would supersede all state laws, and I think it would definitely make it easier for some of these statewide politicians who may be on the fence. I think it would be made a lot easier with them, you know, to make their decision. You know, I know that there's, I don't know how true it is, but there's a rumor going around that Mary Taylor, who's our lieutenant governor now, and obviously is going to throw her hat in the primary run for governor in 18. She was being interviewed at a meeting in Toledo by the Toledo Blade. And, you know, they were asking her point blank about right to work. And she didn't come out for or against it. The only thing she said is that if it were to be done, she would like to see it done as a ballot initiative. And there is a group in Toledo that is circulating petitions, and they're getting signatures. So we're trying to keep a close eye on that right now, because that could come up on this fall's ballot, which you have an off-year election year, 17, no gubernatorial, no presidential. Democrats and labor members seem to stay home historically in those off-year elections. So that could be a dangerous thing if that appears on the ballot this year.
Mm-hmm. Seems like they forgot about SB 5 if they're going to go down that route.
Yeah, you're right. And some of the statewide leaders that are still in the House and Senate that were there during Senate Bill 5, I saw some comments, I think it was in the Cleveland Plain Dealer yesterday. Scott Olslager, who's a friend of ours, came out and said he voted against SB 5 and he's not for right to work. You know, and then the rumor, obviously, I don't know if you've talked about it on your show as well, is, you know, there's a rumor that the reason that Ohio lost the Amazon Air Hub, which looked like it was going to go on the old DHL site in Wilmington, it went instead to Northern Kentucky. You know, and there's a rumor out there that's being spread that's not true. I've talked to people and they said it's not true. It never came up. That the reason that Amazon chose Kentucky is because Kentucky just became more labor friendly because they went right to work and Ohio is not. You know, we've got to hold on to our own here. We've got to keep up the fight. It is unfortunate, like we've talked about in the past, Michigan, Indiana, West Virginia, and now Kentucky, and we're almost surrounded, but we got to keep up the fight, and we got to keep this going.
Yeah,
you know?
And right to work does not work for jobs. I had a story at the top of the show. They did an analysis of what happened in Wisconsin when they went to a right to work. They lost 10,000 jobs. They dropped to 33rd in the nation in job creation. Cut in pay. The teachers' unions lost about 50% of their membership and 18% of their pay. So, once again, it's the race to the bottom. It's not the way to go. Trump wants to make America great again. You don't do that by cutting people's pay.
No, and we've talked about it on your show. With unemployment down, the economy on the rise, now's the time where pay should be starting to reciprocate, starting to reflect an upward trend. And unfortunately, wages and benefits are still staying, you know, somewhat stagnant as compared to inflation. And you think that that wouldn't be happening with unemployment as low as it is. And the same studies that you read about Wisconsin, I just went through about a 72-page study on the state of Indiana. And, you know, it was dealing with not only right to work, but also the repeal of their common wage, which is like our prevailing wage. And they're saying the same thing. Unemployment has went up. More people are on the unemployment ranks. More people are getting unemployment, which is bad for the state because they're having to pay out more in unemployment compensation. Less local people are working. More people from out of state are coming in and doing those jobs that aren't covered under Davis-Bacon protections. And the wages and benefits of union members and non-union members alike in the state of Indiana are going down because cheaper labor is coming in and taking and doing those jobs. So it's not good for the state at all.
No.
Not good.
No, we just got to continue to reinforce that message, and we got to get it on all radio talk shows in America, not just this show. It's important that people are educated on this issue because it sounds good. Oh, yeah, right to work. You got to have the right to work, but people do not look beyond that slogan, and that's the important thing, and these lawmakers need to be educated. Dorsey, I have to take a break. When we come back, I want to talk about the building trades job fair in the city of Columbus. Is that coming up then, I take it?
We had it last week. I was just kind of wanting to recap with you and some of the things that we're looking to parlay out of that heading into the future.
Okay. We'll do that and do some more. Dorsey Hager on our live line. Also, Danny Coughlin's going to reflect on Cleveland sports and the Super Bowl coming up right here on America's Workforce. Don't go away.
For over 20 years, Organized Labor has turned to the BMA Media Group for communications and events needs. Because BMA knows how to positively impact labor's issues and spread the union message. The BMA Media Group is a union marketing, public relations, production, and events firm. So BMA Media knows what it takes to help unions capture market share, conduct marketing campaigns, partake in political education, promote labor management, organize membership development, and support issues such as prevailing wage, project labor agreements, responsible contracting, and workforce training. They also plan and produce special events such as conventions, conferences, and anniversary celebrations. The BMA Media Group, marketing union value for you. To learn how the BMA Media Group can assist your labor organization, just visit bmamedia.com. That's www.bmamedia.com for all the labor tools you need to move your union into the future.
America's Workforce Radio is sponsored in part by the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades, District Council 6, representing painters, glazers, drywall finishers, and sign and display industry workers. They remind you that belonging to a union is your right as an American.
The AFL-CIO is a proud sponsor of America's Workforce Radio. United by efforts to raise wages, listeners to this show and workers all across America are beginning to turn a corner and drive the economic debate. The AFL-CIO is comprised of 12.5 million working people from 56 unions, but we stand with and fight for everyone who is working for a better life. For more information about our raising wages agenda, go to AFLCIO.org.
Good afternoon. Welcome back to America's Workforce, broadcast from Ohio for workers around the entire world and archived on AWFradio.com. Let's go back to our live line, rejoin Dorsey Hager of the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council. Give you the website one more time. It's columbusconstructiontrades.org. All right, Dorsey, tell me about this jobs fair you had in the last week, a building trades job fair. You and I have been talking about this for quite some time, getting people interested in the trades. I take it that was part of this this component?
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of primary focuses, but a huge focus of mine the last 3 years since I've gotten this position has been working with Columbus City School Board, Columbus City School Superintendent Dan Good, and also their counselors and their principals. And the reason being is the attitude or the opinion of the superintendent before Dr. Good was that all kids have to go to college. And we've talked about this at length on your show. You know, some kids, unfortunately, don't have the intellect or the wherewithal to be able to go to college. Some kids don't have the finances to afford to go to college. And some kids, even though they may be college material, aren't sure what they want to do, and they know that college is not what they want to do, you know? And so I've had a good relationship with Dr. Good. Our mayor, Andrew Ginther, has been a huge advocate of the building trades programs and getting these kids into our program as a means to a path to the middle class and tying into his rebuilding neighborhood initiative, which I think is doing wonderful. So in these meetings we've had with him and then his building trades labor liaison that works for the mayor, Barry Pickett, they had the idea for this building trades job fair. And the Mechanical Contractors Association of Ohio and also SMACT, the Sheet Metal Workers Contract Association, kind of took the bull by the horns. Rob Gardner, the apprenticeship director for the sheet metal workers, he really busted his butt on this, as well as Barry Pickett, and they put this together, donated a lot of time, a lot of money, and a lot of effort. And at Fort Hays, which is the technical school here in Columbus, we had this job fair, and with the help of the mayor, Superintendent Dan Good, and the advertising and publicity, ABC6, Channel 6 News, it was an incredible event. And even though it was only 2 hours last Thursday, 5 to 7 p.m., we had about 285 students come through.
Woo!
And we had hands-on for the electrical workers. You could do some stuff dealing with electrical work. We had hands-on the bricklayers. You could lay brick and mix mortar and get your hands dirty doing that. Cement workers were doing stuff. The sheet metal workers were building out of sheet metal. They were fabricating toolboxes. And the kids really enjoyed that. And I think the parents did, too. You know, it's a key to get to the parents because we've talked about this on your show. When I go to job fairs, it's so funny. You'll have a mother and father come through with their child, and their child's interested in being a welder or an electrician or even a laborer, you know. And the mother says, no, my baby's going to college. He's not going to dig ditches or climb ladders for the rest of his life. And then the dad says, well, no, let's talk to this guy. Hold on now. He can come to your program. I don't have to pay nothing for tuition and books. You're going to cover all that. You're going to take care of him. You're going to train him. You're going to teach him the soft skills he needs to be productive and to be, you know, and to be employable. And then in 4 to 5 years, depending on the length of the apprenticeship, he's going to graduate and he's going to make anywhere from $50,000 to $120,000 a year plus a full benefit package. Where do I sign him up for this? Because the quicker I get him off my payroll, the better, you know? And it's amazing the pragmatic side of it. And a lot of these parents were taking place in this too. And I'll tell you another thing. And I find this very interesting. We just talked about it in the first segment. Unemployment, you know, is down, but wages aren't reflecting it. It's amazing how many freshmen, sophomores, and juniors we have that come through that are interested in our programs And then their mothers and fathers, you know, 32, 35, 37, are like, wait a minute. A first-year sprinkler fitter apprentice starts off at $1,566 plus a full benefit package. I've been working at this warehouse for 15 years, and I make $12 an hour. Can I sign up, or do you have to be in high school or 20 to 25? No. If you're interested, you can sign up as well. So that's what we're doing. We're partnering with the mayor. We're partnering with Columbus City Schools. Dominic Peretti, who's on Columbus City School Board, is a huge friend of mine. He was there for the whole time, speaking to students, counselors, principals, their parents, going around speaking to every one of our training directors about the programs they have and they offer. He's a huge advocate of this, and it's parlaying also into what we've been talking about on your program, about how the training and the getting these kids into our programs is great, but we also need the jobs. So we're talking to Dominic, and we're working with him and his finance committee, because they've got about $160 million worth of renovation work coming up on Columbus City Schools. So we're talking about strengthening language so that way they hire contractors that use joint apprenticeship programs, that train their workers, not just employ their workers, and that also have an eye on local hiring. Because it's like I told Dominic, he has 56,000 kids in his school district. You drive around the city of Columbus and Franklin County, you see all these cranes and job sites and holes are digging in the ground. His kids should be graduating and working on these projects.
$50,000 to $120,000 a year you could make in the building trades, and that sounds like, I think you got a couple people's attention down there, Dorsey.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And plus, you know, I've told you this before. When I was in college in the early '90s, and then you know, I got out of college and I joined the building trades. A lot of my friends who were teachers, accountants, you know, some even lawyers were like, what the heck are you doing? You
right.
know, I thought you were going to be a school teacher. What are you doing? And I just told them, I said, you know, the scenery changes. I'm outside. You know, I'm with my friends. You know, I can dress in jeans. I just enjoy it. I
right.
get to work with my hands. When I leave at the end of the day, I look over my shoulder. I can see what I actually did and accomplished. I just enjoy it. And I think the view of building trades and construction work is changing now. I mean, I have cousins that are in the Plumbers and Pipefitters Union that are 189 members that are control techs. And, I mean, they may carry like a level and a pair of pliers, but most of the day they're on an iPad, you
mm-hmm.
know, syncing up systems and stuff. And they're doing as technical as work as anybody. And they're, you know, they're not getting their hands dirty. They're clean. And those opportunities are there, you know, and I think a lot of parents didn't realize that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a different world when it comes to that. I mean, look at auto technicians. We've had a couple of instructors here on the show talking about the need to get auto techs. There's been a lot of retirements, and some of those people are making $70,000 to $100,000 a year. And it's all computer related. You know, you can't fix a car yourself today. I mean,
no, you're right. A friend of mine owns auto dealerships in Columbus and Central Ohio and some in Northwest Ohio and some of the rural areas. And that's what we constantly talk about, what the building trades is doing to recruit and train the next generation of building trades members. And he's always telling me that there's a shortage of mechanics. And I'm like, you need to get into the schools. You need to let these guys and these young adults and these ladies know that these opportunities are there. You need to let them know the money that they can make. And you should be trying to provide these opportunities for him. That's for these people. That's how you get them in there and keep this thing going. But you're right. You know, we've talked about this with the economy getting better, with more work coming up, and then with the baby boomers starting to retire, we're going to get squeezed at both ends. And the opportunities are there for newly graduating kids and young adults to step right into our programs and have a great career. And like I said, what better way to do the work here in Central Ohio than with people that are graduating from Columbus City Schools and our Central Ohio schools and JVSs and trade schools.
And these are jobs that can't be shipped offshore. These are
That's
home
right.
jobs. They're not going anywhere. We need the bridge construction. We need the roads. We need the car mechanics. We need the plumbers, the pipe fitters, the electricians. And we need to keep building, and that's what it's all about. Dorsey, we're going to button it up there. ColumbusConstructionTrades.org. Appreciate your energy. And let's do this again in a month, okay?
Let's do it. And make sure that, like you started off your segment with, let's enjoy some of those union-made and union-delivered products. Have a good time watching the Super Bowl. When we talk in March, I think we'll be talking probably about spring training, about another upcoming successful Indian season, and hopefully talking about the Cavs getting healthy and stronger and getting ready for another playoff run.
I'll say one word. Encarnacion.
There you go. Big, bat in the middle. I can't wait.
I love it. Okay, buddy, you take care.
You too. Have a good weekend, Flash. Enjoy the Super Bowl. Thanks.
All right, quick break here.